Well, hello there, and welcome to the AFA podcast, the official podcast of animationforadults.com, interview special. This time we spoke with Seven Najarian, the director of The Whitest Kids You Know's Mars, which is the first and last animated feature from the renowned comedy group The Whitest Kids You Know. Mars is available on Blu-ray in the US now from MediaOCD.com, with the general release coming on March 24th. And now, on with the interview. Nigerian. Welcome to the AFA podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me be here.
We always like to start in the same place, which is with breaking in stories. So how did you first get started in animation?
I started my animation career as at Channel 101. If you don't know about Channel 101, it's a monthly film festival that happened in Los Angeles about 20 years ago. It's still happening. And it's independent creators make a 5-minute pilot and they submit it for competition. And that's where I met Dan Harmon, Rob Schraub, and I started there with my friend Justin Roiland and Abed Gaith. Justin, you would know from Rick and Morty. And so the three of us would just be making cartoons there by necessity, I guess, because we started out doing live action stuff, but I just wanted to do cartoons and everybody else wanted to do cartoons. So we sort of just by necessity learned how to do it and started making them for Channel 101. So a lot of the stuff that we made at Channel 101 early on got us a little bit of success and recognition, like House of Cosby's, Rick and Morty was made for that originally.
So how did you first get involved with the Whitest Kids You Know?
So yeah, as my career progressed from Channel 101, I met one of the guys from Channel 101, actually. He was in a couple things that I was shooting and directing. And then I started working professionally with Trevor Moore on his Disney shows as a visual effects artist and an animator as well. So for several years I did that. So he knew who I was and my skill levels, and Sam knew who I was from just like hanging out and stuff and being part of my friends group. And then when the pandemic happened, they kind of, they just asked me if it'd be possible to animate their script into a full feature, while they were, raising funds through Twitch and YouTube and other things.
So it started off as a live action project, but they moved to animation during the pandemic. Is that?
Yeah, originally it was written as a live action because they're sketch guys, so they're not really animators. So originally they wanted to make maybe I think 10 minute episodes of the script they wrote, and live action, and some way of making it so that it was economical. So they thought about doing it on blue screen in their own garage and stuff like that. But eventually, I don't know who came around to actually. Sam and I were kind of arguing about whose actual idea it was to make it animated, because he thinks it was my idea, but I think it was Trevor's, because he's the one that approached me and said, hey, can we animate this? And knowing that I'm an animator. So yeah, I think because the pandemic came around, it was kind of a perfect timing, because to animate, you could just sit at your computer. I had a bunch of remote workers. So we didn't have to be in the same room. We could be socially distanced. And because of that, obviously you can't do any productions live action at that time, because of the restrictions, and it just cost more money to do it because of that during the pandemic. So really the only problem we had was recording people. We had to record everybody separately. And everybody had to get their own microphone, and we just did it all over Zoom, just like we're doing now.
How closely did you collaborate with the crew of Whitest Kids You Know?
Yeah, so they wrote the whole script and they've been sitting on it for like 10 years. So I didn't really have much of a say as far as story goes, but it was already a great script. Like when I first read it, Sometimes when I read a friend's script, I'm like, oh, it's going to be bad. I don't know if I want to be part of this, but theirs was actually really funny. It was a great script. It was really well thought out, and thankfully they've already done a bunch of table reads. So they really figured out the characters, and a lot of their characters are basically just amalgams of their sketch characters anyways. So as far as that goes, that was kind of locked down. So my job was mostly just to put visuals to that, and they really didn't meddle in it at all. Like, I had pretty much full creative control on the character designs and the look of the cartoon in general. And as a producer and director and editor, I was able to do pretty much anything I wanted. So this is pretty much my project after they gave it to me. After we recorded all the voices, I put it together. They approved it, and then I did it all myself, pretty much. I mean, not my all myself. I had a team, but the creative part was all pretty much me. So I had full creative control at that point. And then they come back and like give a note here or there, but it was like very minimal. So collaborating with them was actually kind of great, because they did their thing and then I did my thing, and it kind of complemented each other to make a good product. So it was a good experience.
As a director, you were able to put your own creative stamp on it.
Yeah, exactly. But originally, when we were recording voices, it was hard to direct them because they already knew how to direct themselves. So there was not much for me to say except for like, "Hey, you forgot to say this," or "You should be saying this loud because there's loud music," or "Can you give me some grunts here and there because you're running." Those are the kinds of things that I was making sure we got. But as far as directing the comedy or the characters themselves, I just let them do what they wanted because they already knew what they wanted. So as far as that goes, that's great, because I love just leaning on the performances for the comedy and for the pacing generally, and they were good at it, so I just let them do it.
How was it making your feature directorial debut compared to directing TV and shorts?
Yeah, that's a big difference. So being a person that works on television, you work on something for a week and then next week it airs sometimes. So at the most, maybe you work on something for a month and then it airs the next week, or you're just sitting on it and waiting for it to air. For this feature, it was like several years. Like, so we started in 2021 and didn't finish until 2024. And that is a long time for me especially, to wait for an audience to look at it and actually get good feedback and see if we did our job right. And with TV, it's like it airs, you get the reaction, you can work on the next episode, knowing that the reaction was a certain way, and you could adjust. So if a joke failed or something wasn't fast enough editing wise, you could adjust between episodes. But for a movie, it's like I'm done. Like, there's so many things I want to change now that I've seen an audience watch it, but it's done. It's like it's already on D Blu-ray, it's already in theaters. So I have to be okay with it being a little imperfect, in my opinion.
What is it? They say that an animation is never finished, it's only abandoned.
Exactly, yeah. I feel like that's true for most projects. But I've developed this thing where I can get to a good enough phase, So for Channel 101, since it was monthly, you're making a 5-minute show every month. You really have to be conscious of that good enough phase. Like, is it going to play well? Because we have to work on the next episode soon. So I found a way to have a good enough phase on this movie, and it really kind of helped us with the budget, because if you don't hit that phase, then you're just gonna go over budget. But yeah, so I have to be okay with it not being perfect, and that's totally fine. I don't feel like it's abandoned, but it in a small way, yes, it was abandoned, because there's a couple of things I really want to change, especially after audience reactions. Like, there was somebody asked me if I did some audio thing on purpose, and I'm like, "What? What is that? I could fix it. I don't want that to be in there. That wasn't on purpose. Let me fix that." So, yeah, it's been abandoned, but it's printed. It's already out, so it's nothing I can do.
How was the visual style developed?
The what?
The visual style, how is it developed?
How was it developed? I hired a bunch of animators or designers initially and had them do some initial designs, and then I finally landed on one guy who I hired as the art director. So because I liked his style the most, so then I used his style as like the Bible of the all the character designs, and he worked with the other character designers and developed the style over a course of a couple months. But for the most part, we were trying to do caricatures of the whitest kids. So we started there, but obviously Darren Trumeter is not a woman, so we couldn't really make a woman look like Darren, even though he's a very pretty man. But we definitely started with characters, and then just kind of deviated from there, because even Trevor, he had a couple characters, and it's, you don't want both of those characters to look exactly the same. We had to deviate a little bit. But the biggest caricature, obviously, is Timmy Williams' character, Whitney Tilliams. But that's like kind of part of the joke in it as well.
What were the major influences on Mars? I guess it'll be on a visual level because you didn't write it.
Yeah, so my biggest influence in the sci-fi world is Farscape. And if you don't know Farscape, it's like the Jim Henson Company worked in Australia to make this, I don't know, 6-season show, it's called Farscape, and it's basically Buck Rogers. But there's like a lot of puppets, and the graphics are really cool. I forgot when that came out, back in the 90s or late 90s, early aughts.
Yeah, I think
And
so.
so I was a big fan of that. And that show ended up becoming funny, because it's like a hard sci-fi show, but it was like the characters were so funny after season one that there's just a thread of comedy throughout it. So that's a major influence as far as style and comedy goes. Obviously I love the greats of the comedy greats, like Monty Python, Three Stooges, stuff like that. Very slapsticky comedy, like very absurdist comedy. I worked on Children's Hospital for Adult Swim, a bunch of other stuff that's basically all absurdist comedy. So that's kind of where my comedy comes from. I also very much like dark comedies, and some of that's in here in the movie as well. So yeah, my influences are pretty vast, but I would say I also looked at some of the Whitest Kids sketches, and there's one sketch. It's called, I think they call it the potato sketch. It's they're in a spaceship, and they're like seated back, so that behind them is the gravity is like behind them, And one the guy up top, Trevor's character, is like opening up bags like stuff and like spilling it behind them, and like just spilling all over people. And for some reason, I thought that was one of their funniest sketches, even though it's not one of their popular sketches. But I kind of base a lot of the designs and just like thinking around that particular sketch, because that's pretty much the movie. It's just like an extended version of that sketch. It's just them fucking around being dumb. Am I allowed to swear on this?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay.
It's animation for adults. It's fine.
Okay, great.
What were the biggest challenges you faced making the movie?
Yeah, the biggest challenge, well, obviously, it was Trevor Moore died in the middle of it. So we started in February of 2021, and then he died in August of that year. And so, as a big creative and producerial force he was, we lost a whole section of the structure of how we were making this movie. And obviously, everybody lost their friend as well. And it's still to this day, it's like it's hard to believe that he's died, he's left. So that was a pretty big challenge, because we thought we were done at that point, and we had made the animatic, and we were about to start, or no, we started a couple months of animation, and so we just thought like, oh, there's not going to be any money coming in after this, because the guys are probably going to be like, I don't want to hear my friend's voice anymore. Like, and on a project like this, you really do overhear, like you hear and watch things so many times. Like I'm already sick of watching the movie, but I would assume that it's difficult for the whitest kids to watch their friend who's not with us anymore, like hear his voice over and over and over again. So we thought we were done, but eventually the fans like tripled and quadrupled their donations after he died, and they really like pushed for us to finish this as like a we got to honor Trevor to make this complete. And so it was a big push to try to get us to do it, and so we went back to work and started doing it in the name of like doing it for Trevor. So that was the biggest challenge. Otherwise, other than that, the budget's a big challenge too, because we re initially wanted to raise 300 grand to make it, and then it ended up costing double that. So we had to continue to raise money. I guess that's kind of my fault because I didn't really understand the scope. Coming from television, the scope of a film, I was kind of using the same kind of budget calculations that I do on television stuff. So I'm like, oh, this is basically 10 episodes of a 10-minute show. So I budgeted it that way. But for some reason, the film just cost twice as much, and we had to make some creative choices that made it cheaper without compromising the entire look. But I really feel like we nailed the style, and we were able to work with the budget we had, and it worked out.
I know you wore several different hats on this production, working, you're credited as working as an animator as well as director and several other roles. How did you juggle your different roles?
Yeah, I'm kind of used to that. That's something I learned at Channel 101 as well. It's like if you're trying to get something done and you're like, there's nobody here that knows how to edit, I might as well learn how to edit. Or that's how I learned how to animate, sound design, producing, directing, animating. Like I learned it all at Channel 101. So it's kind of just in my nature to do that. And because of the budget was so small, I already knew that I was going to be the editor. Like, I can't afford an editor, but I'm a good editor, so I'm just going to do it. And then whenever the money ran out, I just was like, okay, I guess I'm jumping in to animate, and I'm jumping in to do all these other things. And that was just by necessity because the budget was so low. But again, like I'm used to it, so I wear a lot of hats normally. I feel like I'm left and right-brained. So I can organize and be creative at the same time. So for me, it's easy, and it's preferable for me to wear many hats.
Can you talk about what you're working on next or what you're working on now?
Yeah, so I got a couple things going. I stopped working on an animated short right before I started working on the movie, and so it's been on hold for several years. So I'm gonna jump back into it. However, we made a lot of advances on the movie in the way I animate. So going back to an old project is going to be very painful. And I jumped into it for a couple days here and there, and I'm like, oh wow, this is going to take forever because of the way I designed it is a lot harder than the way we designed the movie. So I'm going to jump back into that. It's a short about a couple of Arabic kids that accidentally overdose on a psychedelic, and then they kill themselves. So it's like a dark comedy. But I love having the contrast of working on a comedy and then working on something very dark and then coming back to comedy, because I think that's important to, refresh my brain and have like a palate cleanser creatively. And then I also have another thing that's very dark. It's a documentary that I'm working on. Actually, I've been shooting it for the, I don't know, probably 10 years now. But the main character died in the middle of it, so I only have a little bit of footage, but it's a documentary about a guy that's lived with about 23 cats in his small bedroom apartment, one bedroom apartment, and then he did a lot of like cat rescue and cat colony maintenance on the streets of LA, like pretty much a couple nights a week, and he spent a lot of time doing that instead of maintaining any human relationships. So he hated humans, loved animals, and he ended up killing himself on heroin alone in a hotel. So it's very dark, and I'm trying to figure that documentary out, but because there's a lot of footage, and I haven't started editing yet, but I'm trying to figure out a way to process all that stuff without without having to use it all. Like, there's just so much footage. You can only put it, an hour and a half of footage in, so it's very difficult to go through that kind of footage. And again, I'm making a feature film that I'm not used to making. Well, now at this point, I am making features, but it's another example of me trying to make something that's going to take forever compared to what I'm normally used to.
Yeah, awesome. That's all our questions. Thank you very much for speaking with us today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Been a really interesting chat.
Thanks for listening. And if you want to catch up with everything we're doing, visit us at animationforadults.com for the latest animation news, reviews, and stuff. On social media, you can find us on Twitter at AFA Blog. You can find us on Facebook, Pinterest, Tumblr, Instagram, and more coming soon. If you'd like to help us out, you can visit us at patreon.com/animationforadults or make a donation via PayPal or buy us a virtual coffee. Thanks again for listening and stay tuned for more.